What a curious hole this one is. You start off on this par three that is one of the few pure hyzers left for right-hand backhanders on tour, I feel like. It is...
Well, one at Waco.
No. Did I say it's a par three already? It is a par three.
You start off on a par three.
Okay. And you start off by having to hit a gap because you start in the woods, but you don't finish in the woods. You actually finish on a field where wind can be a factor, but you don't feel it from the woods. I would say to get out of the woods, you have to throw it approximately 100 feet, maybe a bit less, maybe a bit more.
Is a whole one at Shelton Springs?
You got it.
Wow.
You know what's weird? I was thinking I was going to do that hole if it was my hole.
Oh my goodness. We are the same person.
We are all connected.
After all.
Wow.
Welcome back.
Welcome.
This is only four days after
we
last recorded.
We've been on a streak, I think. We've gotten, because we recorded...
We're red hot. We're the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
We recorded GMC kind of near the end of the tournament, didn't we? And then we recorded...
No, we recorded like... a day or two into the tournament. I think it was either day one or day two.
Okay, it was after day two.
Right, but okay, so we recorded like Friday, and then last week we recorded on like Wednesday, and now we're recording again on Tuesday. So we're going right now.
We're on fire.
Man, hole one at Shelton Springs. I played, that was my one like, besides not playing the first 29 weeks of the year, that was my one round that I played on my birthday. Because I forgot to drop out without a refund.
No, I remember you played. That's why I chose the hole. I was like, yeah, that was Joey's actual first round. And then
and
you dropped out.
And
that was your birthday round?
That was my birthday round. And I was like literally game time decision because it was like hurting in warm-ups. It wasn't feeling great. But it wasn't getting a lot worse. And so I just like, I was looking at Maria and I really didn't know what to do. And I just like walked over to make the 5 minutes and just kind of like did a couple dry throws on the tee and it felt okay. And so I was like, all right, whatever. I think I'll try to make it through. But I told my card that I wasn't sure, but I was going to try to play the whole round. And then I stepped up and
parked it.
Parked it. I put it to like 2 feet.
Speaking on DNFs in Vermont last week, I witnessed my first DNF. Not ever, I think, but I don't think I've been part of more than like three DNFs in my whole career on my card. And it was really sad. Joey Buckets was complaining about back pain basically from hole one and just like clearly in physical pain the entire round after every throw, just holding his back and kind of being very frustrated and disappointed. And on hole eight, he after his tee shot, he said, I don't think I can do this. And then he was very sad, and I was also very sad. And that was Joey.
It's the worst.
That was so sad to witness.
I played with Evan Smith. And his back was killing him the entire round. And he still played pretty decent, I think. But, yeah, after hole one, he was, like, feeling his back, and you could clearly tell that something was up. And speaking of Shelton Springs, I got two holes in, and I was playing Gavin Rathbun the first round, and he had to drop out because of back problems. My heart goes out to all the people, because if you haven't had, like, legitimate back pain before and you ever made fun of someone whose back hurts, it's like, just wait until it happens to you, because it's literally one of the worst feelings in the entire world.
Yeah, last year I had such bad back pain, I couldn't walk for 3 days. And, I mean, pain in general, everything just sucks if you're in pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it is.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I think most of the big players on tour have all dealt with something. I mean, Ricky was playing with a grade 2 ankle sprain on his left foot. And, I mean, I know Calvin's dealt with elbow pain, and Bradley and Kristen both had, like, kind of plant pinky toe breaks. And Eli is going home to get an MRI right now for a stress fracture on his plant foot. So,
all right, I'm going to throw in a quick Simon Shines here because it relates perfectly to pain. And Simon Shines is a segment where I shine the light on my favorite things in life. And this one is, one of my least favorite things in life is having a stuffed nose.
Wait, so we get a Simon Wines into a Simon Shines?
No. Yeah, kind of, sort of.
I think
we
need
a Simon Shines jingle. It needs to be like super uplifting and like angelic.
Inspirational.
I think we got to tell Eric. He made the first one, so.
Well, I just thought of this because we just said that back pain, obviously any pain makes everything in life just worse. But yes. a stuffed nose also kind of makes everything worse. Like, yes. When you have a stuffed nose, you like start realizing how much you don't appreciate when you don't have a stuffed nose. So you actually think like, wow, if I could just breathe normally right now, I would be like, all my problems would be gone. That's what it feels like if you have a stuffed nose. So
a clear nose, a clear mind.
Tell us that you have two young kids without telling us that you have two young kids.
No, the Simon Shines is that if you feel like you have like a stuffy nose and then you go to blow your nose and it actually helps and works perfectly and you can breathe normally after you blew your nose, that has got to be one of the best feelings in life.
Yes.
Right?
Like, very true.
So many times when you have a stuffy nose and blowing your nose just doesn't really do anything, like that's 99% of blowing your nose. But sometimes when you're not actually sick, you're just kind of like stuffed up a bit or like after waking up or whatever.
What about
and like you blow your nose and it just clears everything up? You're just like, oh my God, this is unbelievable.
I feel alive again.
So I just wanted to shine a light on that real quick.
What about like a successful farmer blow? Have you ever done that?
I've never done a farmer blow.
You don't know what a farmer blow is?
It sounds intriguing.
Okay, well, take a guess at.
I want a farmer blow.
So think about a farmer who's out working in the field. He doesn't have like a tissue with him. So could you guess what a farmer blow is?
It's like a snot rocket?
It's a snot rocket.
Ah.
It's called a farmer blow.
Okay.
Have you ever done like an absolute. So, because I've had a couple on the disc golf course that were absolute missiles, and it was more satisfying because you cleared your nose, but you also absolutely obliterated a leaf.
And then the next day you can go back, look if it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay, so I was going to bring this up after Simon's initial.
Is that the name of this episode? Snot Rocket.
I have a deviated septum.
Oh. You
know what that is?
Yes, my best friend did a front flip at Sky Zone and took a knee to his nose and deviated his septum for like 10 years. And then he got it fixed with the surgery.
Yeah. So like mine's not that bad, but when it comes to snot rockets, it's like, there's no chance I'm doing that because it's going to go into my mouth and all over my face.
Oh,
so it's not even like anytime I've tried to be cool, if that's what you want to call it, it's turned into a disaster. So, in one of my, it's on the list to potentially go to an ENT and see if I'm a candidate for fixing my deviated septum, because I've only heard that the quality of life upgrade you get from fixing your nose is just absolutely tremendous.
It's astronomical.
Yeah, because the main thing there is you're literally taking in more oxygen and your body just works better. So, like, I've been extremely intrigued by potentially getting it fixed.
What about those, like, little kind of nose magnet strips?
I'm sure it helps a little bit.
No, but like, there's, like, the ones that have, like, the magnets on them. I saw, like...
I feel like those are fake news.
No, they're not. Like,
you've tried one?
No, but I, like, the testimonial from, like, some of the top athletes that I've heard it from, especially former Twins shortstop Carlos Correa. They interviewed him in a live game, and he was using it.
Is he sponsored by them, though?
No, he wasn't. He was not sponsored. He was, like, he was just talking about how he wasn't getting good sleep, and his wife was tired of him snoring, and he was always kind of stuffed up, and so his wife, like, ordered it for him and convinced him to try it, and he said it, like, completely changed his life.
Wow.
Does any of our listeners have any testimonials? If you do, please send an email in, because I'm curious to know their experiences.
Comment on this episode on Spotify.
Yeah.
In the comments, let us know if you've had positive experience with the nose magnets.
Or have had deviated septum surgery.
Oh, successful.
Yes, because I am very interested. I want a nose job, if you will.
Nose job. Is that the name of the episode? I mean, I like Snot Rocket, but...
We have contenders. Well,
we're only like 18 minutes into the podcast. There's a lot of other...
Yeah, but we have some absolute heavyweights so far.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about where we are right now?
Yeah.
Where?
Me and Simon haven't moved.
You guys are in the Lizotte headquarters.
Yep.
Still.
We are in the same couch.
Yeah, and
the sunroom.
My trees are getting obliterated as we speak. You can probably hear it in the background, actually, because we're also in the least soundproof room of this entire house as well. Yeah, there's some wood chipping going on in the back and some cleaning.
I have never seen a machine do something like that. I mean, it turns a gigantic tree into a pile of wood chips, like in less than a minute. It's unbelievable. It just sucks it in and spits out a bunch of wood chips. It's insane.
What did we call it before the episode started? Jack the Chipper?
Jack the Chipper.
Yep.
And both of our cars are currently getting worked on, serviced. I got a flat tire at Maple Hill, and I changed it in the parking lot, in the grass parking lot, which was a bit risky because of how muddy it was. But the jack
wow.
Held.
Your car could have fell on you.
Not really. It was just more like a slow sink into the mud, but it didn't. It was a pretty solid spot. So, yeah, I'm getting the other three tires now replaced for the same reason that Eagle had his four tires replaced before Preserve, was it?
Yep.
Yeah. I also have all-wheel drive. So, and then Simon is getting recall and some cleaning and...
Just normal stuff.
Normal stuff. But, yeah, Eagle's in Jersey. What exit?
What exit?
Yeah, that's the saying if you're from Jersey.
So... What's up, everybody? How you doing? I'm here on the Jersey Shore, and yeah, the waves are good. I'm going to go put my toes in the sand, get myself a glass of water, cup of coffee, get myself pork roll, egg and cheese, all that good stuff. Maybe grab myself a slice with some artichoke on it to choke on, you know what I'm saying? And yeah, it's a good time down here.
Hey, forget about it.
Forget about it.
Yeah, I'm at my aunt's house right now, who lives on the Jersey Shore. My dad is from the Jersey Shore, so I have my roots in New Jersey. So I've been coming back. I've been coming here since I was a kid, and it's I'm not gonna say a home away from home, but there's a comfortable feeling here, which is nice. And I haven't seen some of my family in a pretty decent bit, so it's good to reconnect with them and, you know, reflect on the past and feel good being together, as you do with family.
Can we get a Pat McMahon guest appearance on this episode?
So he's actually playing disc golf right now with some of his buddies that he made last time he was here. So the answer is no.
I heard good things about New Jersey disc golf through the grapevines.
Yeah, there's a small chance that I link up with Dustin Wolf this week and go play a course potentially. And yeah, he's a Jersey local, so he'll show me the ropes, and it's always good to see Dustin. So that will hopefully happen.
Nice.
Well, good luck.
We
thank you.
Successfully installed Simon's darts setup last night.
That was an unbelievable miracle that worked.
Yes. Oh, look at that. Could be a guest appearance right there.
Albert Tam just walked onto the patio.
Should we invite him over? Maybe in a bit?
Yeah.
It must be like one of the purest people.
I want an Albert guest appearance.
We'll invite it. It looks like he's on a FaceTime.
Our Estonian fans.
When he's done with his FaceTime, I'll make a little gesture at him. Because me and Albert and Maria, we had quite a day yesterday for ourselves. We went out to Simon's course, Mile Marker Disc Golf. And
please, I know everyone says it's Simon's course, but it is not my course.
Okay, Simon designed course.
Yes.
And Casey designed course.
Yes.
It's much more your course than some other people that I've met who say like a random city course is their course and do work on it without even asking the city. I've met a bunch of people who claim courses for whatever reason.
We went to a golf driving range afterwards. And we had quite a day. And then, yeah, we successfully installed the Scotia. Is that how I say
Scolia.
It? Scolia dart setup, which is like a camera light scoring iPad Wi-Fi thing. That, like, it just kind of has a British man on this darts app and three cameras by the lights, and it, with a little bit of calibration and some miraculous Wi-Fi password memory, and just, like, I mean, honestly, just like a string of wins in a row. Small victories that led to a successful setup.
I'm excited to play more darts again, because the main reason I never played was I didn't have a setup. And now I do, so I'm stoked.
That looks sweet. We just need like some stronger tape, or you have to go get like a freaking concrete drill and put some bolts through that.
No. So my basement
is it in the basement?
Yeah, my basement people are coming tomorrow, actually, because we're working on making the basement into a nice space. So hopefully this off season that will get done, and then I'll have a proper setup. Something nice, official. No concrete drills needed.
Yep. But we have that nice gymnastics mat that is absolutely the perfect distance away, that works like a very nice kind of temporary hockey for us. It is like the best we've had all year.
I'm not, for some reason, sadly, I'm not surprised that I bought a gymnastics mat to like stretch on and do light workouts on, and it ended up being my darts hockey. That's just very on brand.
I mean, I was the one who put it there, so I don't know if that's how it
No, I've used it for literally that too.
I see.
Yeah, that's why I was there.
It's called
well, it just happened hockey, to be the right length.
Hockey, that's the I don't know what to call it. It's like the little step up. It's a just kind of it's the raised platform that is the exact length that you have to be from the dartboard, so the players can kind of lean against it a bit with their weight.
I think about hockey, and I think of the sandwich guy in New York. Don't forget the Bev. Never, never, never.
Never. Never, ever.
Casey White went did a vlog with him in it. Do you remember that?
What?
Casey White did a vlog of him going to New York and getting a sandwich from him.
I have to go watch that, I guess.
Me too.
Him and the one dude, Jarrett.
Jarrett.
Neesmith?
Yeah.
Oh, legend.
I don't know. I always think of that vlog for some reason when I think of Casey White vlogs.
Wow.
Top tier quality content right there.
Do I have to get him now?
So, should we talk about MVP Open a little bit?
I think so.
Yeah, let's unpack it. A lot went down.
Eagle McMahon got a hole in one.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I probably feel exactly how you felt when you got your hole in ones this year. My first feeling was there's no way it actually stayed in, because I've been victim to so many spit outs in the last 10 years.
When was your last tournament, Ace?
Well, it's actually, that's my first Pro Tour ace on
what?
Any sort of NT, Elite Series, Major.
Really? Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
What?
But my last tournament ace was in 2018 at
Idaho.
Oklahoma Open.
Oklahoma Open.
Which was an A tier. But
sheesh.
I've had four tournament aces ever. So actually no, this is the fifth one. This is the fifth one now. And if any of you guys don't know, it was hole 13, Maple Hill, in the long position. Like literal dream ace, honestly. Like I think it's easily in contention for my best ace ever. The only other ace that I can really think about that was better was the roller ace, because
the just forehand roller ace at Hammond Park, hole 9, legendary video with the meta instinct.
Unbelievable.
That's like a whole podcast, wow, in itself, that video even happened. That was a nuts.
That the video even happened?
Yeah, that was like post round in Emporia. We were all not really in the mood to go do it, and somehow it ended up happening, and then it just happened. It was magic.
It's just crazy that hole 13 got aced twice in practice in the longs. Once by Braden Sides, once by Anthony, which I filmed, which is now my most viewed reel ever on Instagram.
Whoa.
And then Cole aced the short in tournament. And you saw it, didn't you?
I was on the card.
You were on the card. And then Eagle aces the long. And Chandler aced hole 8.
There's been so many aces on tour lately, I feel like. There's like an ace every week. And I don't really feel like that used to be the case.
I mean, there's nothing at D-Glo. So I think when you have two courses at Vermont that are like ace run heavy, which is what we love, and then also you have this course, which is ace run heavy, or at least the par threes, like it can happen.
Well, it's usually like you hear about hole 3 or hole 4, hole 5, but those holes kind of rarely get aced. Maybe 14, Matty O, I mean, but
I feel like that was the first time I heard of that hole getting aced.
Yeah.
All right, well, amazing ace, Eagle.
What disc was it?
Yeah, it was an Eclipse Vector.
What?
Yeah,
it's is
like
that?
Literally, it's like a one of one, just complete money disc. And
the most unpromotable disc of all time.
Shout out to the guy who got it on camera. He Jack Casella, or I think that's how you say it, but he got it on camera, and you don't really see it stick in the basket, but you get an idea on the flight of the disc. I threw it on a slight hyzer, and it just worked the fairway absolutely perfectly. Started on the left side, gradual flip up, barely misses the tree on the left side, starts drifting right, and just heart of the basket. You know, that's it. it put a smile on my face. I was in disbelief for the rest of the day, honestly, because it didn't feel like, given what I feel like I've been going through on the disc golf course, I feel like that was not in the cards for me, which it feels really good to know that it is. Because a few shots before that ace, I literally threw one of the worst shots I ever have in my life on hole 11.
Oh no.
The biggest Christmas tree. Like, how do you do that? Like, especially when you're trying not to throw it in the Christmas tree and just trying to chip short. And I threw my shot, I was trying to do this like patent pending, and I yanked it. It hit the tree right in front of me, and it literally went probably 6 inches away from my mark. And it just was like, what is this game? It's like, that's just a totally wasted throw in every capacity. And a few shots later, I made it in one. So it's like, what is this game?
How did you back up your ace on the next hole?
I was afraid of throwing it in the water, so I played it extra safe and just took a par.
Okay.
Yeah, I finished the rest of the round even. Or no, I had a bogey on 16, par 17, and 18. I got a birdie.
You love hole 16, don't you?
I would love it if I knew kicking left wasn't an option.
Yeah, that hole broke my soul almost every time. Two. It is crazy.
That's a soul breaker. That hole.
If you don't get over that hill, it is a really, really, really good par. And I know, Eagle, you saved a par one of the rounds from in front of the hill. That was a really nice par save. It took a big putt as well, but a really nice. I mean, it's a blind, slightly poke and hope, like forehand Anheuser or like kind of flex. It sucks. Not where you want to be. You have to just get over that hill, and then you can probably have a jump putt. But
whoa! Say something.
Hello.
Oh, you've turned. Oh gosh, you guys have turned into robots.
Oh no!
Hold me back. Oh wait, I think you're normal again. Sorry, guys. We're having some technical difficulties this episode.
All right. Well, we had.
We'll tackle the rest of the MVP Open, but I want to talk to Simon about this, and I have to give him, I don't even know what you want to call it, but I have to give him a little bit of crap. How do you feel about this year's East Coast Metal Roofing CTP event?
No.
I want to hear your words.
I mean, I felt really bad about it. I wish it wasn't what it was.
It's not your fault. You did nothing wrong.
No, it sucked. I didn't like it at all. It made me feel terrible. And I wish
you don't need to feel terrible about it. I don't want to make you feel bad.
No, it literally ruined my night.
Oh, no.
I don't enjoy getting lucky at all. Especially, I mean, the first time, I didn't even know the freaking format. I didn't know that it was one versus one shot, and then that's like 1 point, and then you move to the next round. I thought just a CTP contest is we have 3 shots, and the closest disc wins. That's what I thought was happening. So I thought it didn't even matter that I was in bounds by a freaking millimeter. And, yeah, I mean, doing a CTP on a hole where stuff like that can happen is obviously not ideal, but the fact that it happened twice and Evelina also did it and ended up winning because of it is freaking insane.
What are the odds? Like, literally, what are the odds?
Yeah, well, I felt really bad about it. I was so exhausted and tired after my round. Like, I literally couldn't throw 400 feet anymore. I like couldn't get a disc there. It was so weird. And I mean, at the end of the day, that isn't really that close to the basket. It was like 30 feet away, so I guess you guys could have just thrown a better shot. And at the end of the day, if I would have thrown a better shot, I would have still won. So it kind of was like what it is. And I wish it wasn't fluky like that. That's all I can really say. I hated it, to be honest.
You'll be the first person and probably the last to ever win that competition throwing a total of 4 shots into the lake.
Yeah, maybe.
Did they all hit the water first, or?
I honestly don't even remember what happened. They just were leaning on the rocks and were inbounds.
That's just the way the cookie crumbles. And you know what? I forgot to say, congratulations.
What, on winning?
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. I guess.
You're a good dad. You deserve it.
I would have much rather not won, to be honest, and felt better about myself.
No, you gotta take what you can get. I would have loved to have your outcome.
No, on Casey's last shot, I was literally hoping that he would get closer because I didn't want to win that way. But he didn't. And what am I going to do at that point? All I can do is say, sorry, bye. Sorry, bye.
Yeah, but wild times.
How are your events, boys?
Simon's on a roll right now, so let's hear it. Let's hear it from the hummingbird himself.
Man, the first 32 holes were really good. Is that right? Through 14?
Yeah.
Through 14. No. Yes. Through hole 14 of round 2, you were 10 down.
I think I was 11 down.
11 down.
Yeah.
Rolling.
I might have been 12 down. Yeah, I was 12 down.
You were playing well.
Yeah. I was doing totally fine.
With like maybe one bogey on the entire section.
So round 1 in the pouring rain, by far the worst conditions we had all week, of course. I felt so comfortable. I was confident in my release point. I was making most of my putts. Everything was feeling right. For the first time in months, I felt like I knew what I was doing, which is weird in those conditions to feel that way. But that's just how it felt. And I shot an okay 6 down. It could have been way better because both my bogeys were really unnecessary 3 putts. So it could have easily been like an 8 or 9 down and like leader in the clubhouse after round 1 should have been, but whatever. Get to round 2, lead card, feeling good, warming up, everything's nice. I get to start the round. I start birdie on hole 1 and my card went bogey, bogey, double bogey on hole 1. So I gained 7 strokes on my card on hole 1. So I was like, okay, here we go. Let's just cruise through this because I know this place better than anyone and I'm feeling good. And I play an okay round. I don't really get as many birdies as I would like, but I didn't bogey all the way up to hole 16. I get like the worst kick I've ever seen on that hole. I don't know if you saw that, but I hit the right side of the tree on the right, but I hit a little branch. And then even though I hit the right side of the tree, I still kicked left because that branch like ricocheted me into the tree and then it like bounced like 100 feet backwards into like the OB as far back as you can possibly be OB. It was the craziest kick I've ever seen. And then I double bogeyed that. And then I double bogeyed 17 and saved a par in 18. And it was just devastating. But I was still in fine position. 8 under after 2 rounds was still okay. I think we were on 3rd card at that point.
3rd card. We played together round 3.
Yeah, and round 3 was shaped up to be the perfect conditions to play disc golf. Like mid-70s and virtually no wind. So it was like as nice as Maple Hill can possibly play. And I started off well. If I remember correctly, everything's a bit of a blur already, but I think I was like 2 or 3 down after a handful of holes. And then I got kind of an unfortunate break on hole five where my disc landed inbounds and like jumped off a root back over the wall, but I still got a par. And then I went bogey-bogey on 6 and 7, which can happen pretty easily and quickly, but still felt really bad about it. And then I took a triple bogey on hole 8. And from there, the downward spiral took full effect. And it was absolutely miserable. And it's so sad that how fast and unnecessarily that can happen. But after that, everything was just bad. There's no other thing to say. I shot 7 over that round. My worst rated round in like, I think my second worst rated round in 7 years-ish. And then I shot a really, really lazy and horrible even par. The final round finished in like 52nd or 3rd or something. Just really bad. And I don't know. I did not like that course at the end of round 4 at all.
I think a lot of people did not like the changes. And I think those people are valid.
I feel like Maple Hill in the last 3 years turned from like the funnest, like most unique course, special plays, into just trying to be as hard and punishing as possible. And a lot of people don't see it because all you see on YouTube is freaking the best of the best playing the best. And the other 80% of the field is just out there kind of hating their lives. I mean,
I concur.
That some of those holes, especially the new ones, you're just like, you're walking down the fairway being like, what is this? Why am I here?
Yeah, I don't think hole one is very good right now.
The new green on hole one is unacceptable, in my opinion.
I mean, it's just, I already don't like the landing zone. The landing zone is already not great. But at least,
I mean, the green is just shaped like no disc flies like that.
At least if in the old pin position, you could bomb it straight over the pond and kind of finish long and right of the road, and you could get a birdie. And there's a lot of like short, very short little pine trees, and that was like a pretty consistent spot. Now,
it wasn't
you have
like
to go
everyone
left.
Everyone was just birdieing hole one, no problem.
Sorry?
First place. It wasn't like everyone was birdieing hole one, no problem.
No, I know.
It was still very hard. Like, I always contemplated going for it or not. And this year was like no chance. It never made sense.
No. I mean, even before the change, people were taking double bogeys on that hole constantly.
Yeah, before the Mando, before the reshape of the island, it was fine. It was iconic.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yep. Eagle, what about you?
Yeah, so I felt like my event was adjacent to a fire that was kind of struggling. At times, it almost went out, but it kept burning. It got stoked, and it was burning pretty good at certain times. But then, you know, it cooled down, and it almost went out. But the first round was expecting not that much because it was rainy. I got off to an okay start. It was just kind of managing, getting, you know, I think I was like one or two down going into hole 9. And to talk a little bit about holes that are unacceptable. Hole 9 would be number 1 on my list of the nightmare holes I have to play on tour. Like, I don't enjoy it, and I'm actually quite scared of it. First round, I throw what I felt was the perfect shot. I threw a trail, hyzer flip through the gap, snakes its way through the fairway, and then skips down the hill a bit. Like, I'm not far enough down to like throw a huge sky annie over to like take that water carry shot out of play. So I have to pitch down. I pitch down. I have terrible footing, and I have to do this awkward standstill, which I was kind of salty about because I kind of like, you know, I feel like I should be rewarded for such a good drive. Throw a terrible shot. Don't even cross in bounds. Throw it in the water. throw my neck shot from virtually the same spot and hit the tree that divides the fairway. You know, there's two gaps on that hole going over the water to the par five. I hit this. I couldn't decide which gap I wanted to hit, so I decided to throw right in the middle and hit the tree and kick straight in the water. I pitch up and take an eight, a snowman. And like at that point, my morale just feels so crushed. It's like, what am I supposed to do? I just had just a bad feeling. I felt like I ate something moldy. I ate something rotten and something that I wanted to throw up afterwards.
That's passion, people. That's them passion right there.
It just, like, I didn't know how to really handle it. And I think, what did I do? I fought back. I finished okay. I finished two over for that round, which, to be transparent and not sound like that, as you know, I'll sound like a baby. I was in my van laying in my underwear and shedding tears because I just was so frustrated with how bad I keep playing. And it just was like, oh my gosh, how do I keep doing this and getting the same result? Like, I don't feel like I'm doing anything differently than I used to. And I feel like I still like try, I focus in, I do all that I can to be good at disc golf. And like, why are such bad things happening to me all the time? And then, of course, after such a low, I shoot my best round of the year at 10 under, like 1081 rated. So Joey came to watch me on the last couple of holes to get some media, and he saw on 18, I made the island, and I think I got my first fist pump of the year, which was nice. It was nice. And at that time, it jumped me all the way back into the top 10. I was in first place, but that doesn't really mean anything when the lead card literally just teed off. You know, it felt really nice. The good little bump. And then the rest of the event was, you know, I threw a lot of good shots, but just got maple hilled. That's the best way I can say it. It's like, got a good streak of birdies and then like two or three bogeys in a row. I made up for it. And, you know, shot two down and three down, which is not bad, but it's not going to move the needle in a great direction. So finished 16th place, qualified for the tour championship, got 25th in tour points, and basically a wrap on the 2025 season, other than two more events. And, you know, there's a lot of work to do coming up, but there's some promise on the horizon, which I'm going to try to invest in and make it my time once again.
Wow.
That's a good analysis, sir. Congrats to both of you guys on qualifying for the Tour Championship. Simon finishing in 16th place, 1,000 points. I know, I'm sure you both feel like you had a lot left to be desired, but it is getting harder and harder every year to qualify for the Tour Championship. There are tons of very, 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 very good players who are not going to make it, and both of you have qualified.
Now it's at the point, it's like, you feel good about qualifying.
Yes, like, so you should both be proud of the season you
had. Not to say that that wasn't the case before, but if you just look at the ratings of every player, it's like, how many like 10, 30 plus rated players are there? There's probably more than, there's like around 30. So it's like, you have to be playing quality disc golf all year to get into the top 28. It's like kind of a hard thing to do now.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
It wasn't before, but like, it's hard for the good players to get in now.
Yeah, I'm surprised there's not more Europeans who qualified, because at the beginning of this year, when I saw all the European events were, I mean, not all Americans would be at, I really thought it was going to be so hard to qualify this year because so many Europeans are going to get so many points from all the European events, but it turned out wasn't really true. Mainly also because more Americans went to all these European stops than I expected.
Yeah, that's really what it was. It was only two Elite Series that were kind of isolated, and even those had like Ezra and Conrad and Ricky, and like it was really just Kona Pista and Ale that were kind of on their own because the rest were pretty well attended by Americans.
That's how Maori qualified.
Yeah, but he's not going.
He's not going?
He's got military that starts after USTGC.
Lowry qualified.
Yeah, with a win. And,
Lowry.
Lowry. Yeah, Lowry qualified. So, just to sum up our MPO here, we had Colrid Allen with a fantastic, gutsy finish. Similar to Adam Hammes at PCS, kind of going for a birdie on hole 18 as a par 4 instead of the little chip to take the par. And
I like this play personally.
And it was really cool. The win was very emotional. Did you watch it on the live, Simon, or did you hear about it?
I watched the recap and then watched some of his interview, and
it was pretty cool.
Yeah, Cole for me is always a bit under the radar. Obviously we all know his ceiling is really high and we all know what he can do when he's on. But I didn't really realize how bad of a year he's had. Just shows how little I sometimes pay attention. But I think he summed it up very nicely in his interview at the end of how hard his year has been with injuries and with just poor play and not the results he needs. And I mean, he's a young kid out there trying to make a living, trying to make a name for himself. And I talked to Gannon, I think yesterday. Gannon's obviously friends with Cole, and yeah, Gannon was telling me that Cole was like debating if he was going to tour next year, because I mean, it's just tough if you're not playing well and you're not on like a huge sponsorship contract. It gets pretty lonely pretty quick. So I am very, very happy for Cole that he was able to turn it around the last 2 weeks. Yeah, I think actually in Michigan, Cole also had a top three. I think there was three podiums in a row for Cole.
Or no, it was GMC.
Or Idlewild.
Was it Idlewild?
Yeah, I think Cole might have not played in Michigan. It was Idlewild and then GMC and Maple Hill. He went podium,
so
win.
I talked to him a little bit. I'd call Cole a friend, and he was saying that he wasn't feeling all that good around Idlewild, so he flew home, took D-Glow off because with his hip. He's undergone some hip issues with his hip labrum. So he's done a lot of work. I know he's gotten PRP on it, done a bunch of stuff with Brandon up in Oregon, Oregon Sports Chiropractic. He's kind of like Cole's trainer and consultant, medical consultant, if you will. And yeah, he put in so much work and he's gotten to a place where he can feel good out on the course again, which he's saying like, I got to capitalize on it now. And I played with him GMC and he was just throwing buttery smooth shots as he's known for. And he had a chance to win GMC and then to take that momentum and absolutely demolish Maple Hill. Just shout out to Cole. And I was super stoked to see him persevere, because one of the best feelings in the world is winning, but an even better feeling is when you've gone through so much crap and to take that, to have, because he won Ledgestone. He has a big win, but I'm sure that this win feels probably so much bigger and better to him. So hats off to Cole.
Yes, sir. Congrats. And also Gannon, I think since Estonia, Gannon's worst finish is second. That's freaking crazy.
Yeah, that's insane.
It
sounds like he's living on a different planet.
Second.
Than me.
First, second, second.
Unbelievable.
This guy's, God. Look at all the ones on this, guys.
And I, obviously, winning is, for him, is like the norm. But from my perspective, when he takes second, it's almost more exciting. because he's not completely on his game, but the way he storms back to give the whoever winner that week is a hard time to the finish line is insane. Like what he did with Paul at Ida Wild, like he did not let him off the hook. Same with GMC. It's like he was charging down the stretch. Like he had no business being as close to Paul as he did, but his willpower at the end of tournaments to best whoever is in front of him is just, it's insane. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
Yeah. And he's 20. It's so,
he's 20 years
so
old.
So crazy.
Give me a break.
Well, I actually played a skins match yesterday over at Pyramids, which is right next to Maple Hill. And I was on a card with Gannon Burr, Anthony Barella, and Ricky Wysocki. So, arguably, the best three disc golfers right now in the world. You can throw, obviously, some other names on the list there, but I felt like I was playing against the best three players in the world, more or less. And, I mean, I obviously play with them every now and then, not this year this much as I would like to, but, I mean, I know how good they are, but Gannon is just on a level. I mean, this skins match will be over on Gatekeeper's YouTube channel, so check that out when it's out. Not sure when it will be posted, but the shots and the putts Gannon makes when he has to, like, I could not believe what I was watching. It was, I don't know. I feel like I should be confident enough to say that I can keep up with that and that I strive to be that good, but I just don't identify as that good. I just truly, truly don't.
Well, and he's so creative. That's one of the other things that I don't think he gets enough credit for. He has played for so long. He has all these weird, like, the way he looks at what's possible through the woods is really impressive to me. Me and Eli and Gannon have played these triple tournaments. Actually, it's not going to happen this year because we're going to be at Gyropalooza that weekend. So, but we've played with him, I think, 4 years or 3 years. And when you play triples at Wildcat Bluff, which is like a pretty fun woods course with a lot of these eagleable par fours and par fives, you get to watch Gannon on a totally different mindset because there's absolutely no risk involved with any of it because there's three of us throwing and he's usually kind of the anchor. And some of the shots that I watched him pull off at Wildcat Bluff, like, they top anything I've seen on the Pro Tour by, like, a significant margin. I mean, I've seen 600-foot or 650-foot par fours through the woods that he's parked with these, like, absolutely ridiculous, disgusting shots. Because he's been playing that course since he was 10 years old. And just absolute... him, the only person who can come close to that is Anthony. And there's just the same...
Gannon's, without a doubt, the second farthest thrower.
Without a doubt?
I don't think people give Gannon's distance enough credit, or maybe they do, and I just live under a rock. But every time I play with him, I'm like, oh my gosh, because I always felt like I was known as one of the longest throwers. But when I play with Gannon and AB, it feels like I'm a baby. It feels like, what can I even do?
Well, in order to beat him, Cole Redellin had to shoot bogey free 20 under in the last two rounds to win by one, and he also had an ace. And earlier in the tournament, so just very crazy.
How many bogeys did Cole have in this tournament?
Four.
Four bogeys?
Four bogeys.
And so he had 50 holes bogey-free at Maple Hill. That's just really
impressive.
Here's the
stats. Four bogeys, 31 pars, 37 birdies, zero double bogeys. Gannon with six more birdies, by the way. 43. 20 pars, 9 bogeys to Cole's 4 and 1 double bogey.
Wow.
Holy cannoli.
And I thought for a second that
holy
Cole, I saw Cole's average, like his
Cole-noli.
His putting distances, and I thought for sure he would be at the top, but he wasn't even close. But he is top 10 with 1,248 total feet of putting for the event, which puts him in seventh place because, of course, Andrew Marweed led the event with 1,400 feet of putting. So huge shout out to that. And then just to look over at the tour standings, Gannon takes it down by an absolutely disgusting margin. 700 points.
That is not even real.
17 of 19 top tens this year.
So 17. Calvin Heimberg did the same.
Calvin Heimberg also 17 of 19. But
Calvin has had a quietly amazing season.
Yes, and he finishes in second place. Oh, yeah, jumping
the typical Calvin Heimberg season.
But the battle for second place was pretty tight, actually. There was a bunch of guys that were all close. Ricky, Paul, Isaac, and Calvin, all, and honestly, probably Anthony, all had a chance to take that second place. Instead, it goes Calvin, then Isaac, then Paul McBeth with, honestly, probably one of his best seasons since 2019 on tour.
Mm-hmm.
Really impressive. 17 of 18 caches this year, which isn't, he doesn't care about that, but 11 top tens and more importantly, two wins. But Niklas is actually second in wins with three on the year. We've got AB in sixth, Kyle Klein, Ezra Robinson, Adam Hammes rounds out the top 10, Ezra Aderholt, Sullivan Tipton, another guy who I know was questioning how long he was going to be touring.
Yeah,
and now has really done well. Aaron Gossage, Andrew Marweed, Cole Redallen, your champion, and then Simon Lazat, Evan Smith in 17th, Chris Dickerson, Gavin Babcock, Corey Ellis, Bradley Williams, Luke Taylor, Casey White. Shout out to Paul Kranz, who absolutely played his way. I mean, Paul Kranz just had the best 2 weeks of his life.
I think so.
Final round lead card in Vermont. Final round lead card in Maple Hill.
Yep.
Two top 10 finishes into the Tour Championship. Well in. Finishes in 24th place, one ahead of teammate Eagle McMahon, Mason Ford, Andrew Presnell, Matt Oram is the 28th player in. Ben Callaway will be an added seed for his win. Maori, as we said before, will not be playing. And then there
Who's taking Maori's spot?
There's no one taking his spot. He didn't have a spot. He would be an additional seed because of a win. That's it, not because of points.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So he just doesn't have it. But okay. If we go here...
So Jake Mon got, like, just completely...
Screwed.
That
there were
is horrible.
Five...
He played with Matty O the last hole, and he had to, like, strategically game plan his last hole to make it.
He
was talking to his caddy. He's like, all we need is a par right here. All we need is a par. Just lay up, roll tide, and he got it.
But he would have made it with a bogey as well because he would have gotten the event spot. So he was looking at the standings. So there were four.
So he could have been a gentleman and let Jake Mon in and still got in?
Yes, and kicked out Rasmus Saukkoriipi, I guess. Well, Jake Mon would have had to finish ahead of him, so I think Matt would have had to take in a big number. So there were four event spots that were given out. So shout out to a couple Europeans that made it in. Nestori Tuukkanen getting the first spot, finishing in 10th place in the event. Lauri Lehtinen, Chris Clemens, and Rasmus Saukkoriipi winning in a playoff against our dear friend Harry Chase for the final spot from the MVP Open. And that will be your 33-player field with Benjamin Callaway. We have the Tour Championship set for Ivy Hill in 2 weeks. Any surprises in your guys' eyes when you look across this list? Any notable absences, any names that jump out to you where they are on the list?
I can't really think of any off the top of my head, honestly. It all seems like it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I got a bit. I think honestly, for me, it's big shout out to Sullivan Tipton. I mean, that's kind of the name that when I look on this leaderboard, I'm really. I mean, like, it's obvious to me this year that he is that guy. But that's a very impressive finish and a very impressive season.
Yeah, exactly.
Six top 10 finishes. Very impressive from him.
And I would say, like, I know he's good and he's been playing well all year, but shout out to Paul Kranz again.
Yeah, shout out to Paul Kranz.
This is his first time making the Tour Championship.
Yep. And honestly, shout out to Harry Chase, first year on tour.
Yeah, totally.
First year on tour for Harry Chase, and he was, I mean, one par away from the Tour Championship. And I know he's kicking himself, and I know that, you know, he obviously was that close, and it stings, but he had an amazing season, and I know he's got a lot more to give, so it was cool to watch him find his stride out there on the road and play well at the end of the year. On the FPO side, we had a back-to-back champion, Missy Gannon, and she finished the points in second, I think, as well because of that.
Who won the points?
Oh, Holland Hanley won. But Missy gave her a run for her money. Holland took it down, 17 of 19, top 10s, 4 wins, finished with 2,262 points. Missy in second place with 2,182, and then Owen with 2,114. Our teammate Silva, 1,996, and she had a pretty bummer event after an absolutely blistering first round, 8 under. So I know she probably feels pretty disappointed with the weekend overall, considering the opportunities that she had to move up the rankings. And also, I think really what she feels is a pretty golden opportunity to have won the event. As far as the Tour Championship is concerned, we have Ella Hansen in 5th, Paige Pierce in 6th place, Kat Murch in 7th. Kat Murch, notably, in my opinion, going 18 for 19 caches on the year. And there was only 2 other women who did that, which was world champion Owens Goggins was a perfect 18 for 18, and Holland Hanley was 18 for 19. Oh, sorry, Missy was 17 for 17, and Silva was 16 for 16. Oh, look at me go. All right, well, never mind, Kat. A bunch of these top ladies did it. Sorry. Cadence Burge, is this her rookie year? No, is it?
No.
Still.
She made the lead card at Idlewild like 2022.
Yeah, but I don't know how much she's been full touring. Anyway, very impressive. Top 10 in tour points with her first win. Kristen Lett in 10th place, who will not obviously be playing in the Tour Championship. Evelina in 11th. Hannah Wynn in 12th. Wow, shout out Hannah Wynn. Katrina Allen making the Tour Championship. Shout out Katrina, and shout out Austin and Eloise, the whole squad. We got to see Eloise at a lot of tournaments, and she is easily one of my favorite babies to be around. Very sweet. I just remember at Estonia in the warm-up room, she was just like crawling over to everyone with the little like workout balls, handing them to everybody and all the bands. Rebecca Cox, Anakin Stin, Henna, Jessica Gerthy, Lisa Fakus takes the 18th spot, and then your FPO event qualifiers was Haley King, who qualifies for the Tour Championship with 5 regular season events and makes the Tour Championship. And then Sophia Dunica takes the second event spot. So that is the FPO Tour Championship. Yeah, a couple close calls for some of the FPO ladies, but should be a good time at Ivy Hill. I know they've made some changes.
Do we know the format?
It's like the stroke format. Everybody gets like a starting score.
But this year, I think it's similar to we play a full event. Everybody does.
Right. That's what happened last year.
No, there was cut. There was cut.
Oh, really? After one round?
Yeah, after two rounds.
Huh.
I believe.
Okay.
No, last year we had to play all rounds.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
All the years blend together, especially since we've played everything in Charlotte, and Hornets Nest and Nevin are stored in the same part of my brain. Yeah, I'm looking forward to a venue.
I'm glad we're not playing. Full honesty.
Yeah, me too.
It can be a very depressing way to end your season.
Nevin has a fun course, and I would love to have it as my local course, but playing it for $20,000, oh no, please no.
I mirror your sentiment, and I generally liked Ivy Hill.
Yep.
Maybe I'm...
It's so accuracy-based.
I played well there, but... You know, hopefully they took some of the feedback from Worlds last year and changed just a few things, because it wasn't far off from being a great course, in all honesty. But there was just, like, obviously the basket on the side of the hill that was whack, yo. And then a few other things, like hole 17's green was like, wait, what? But other than that, you know, it's a good property, great facility, and I think it's an adequate location to host an event of such high quality to finish off the
year. Fact check me on this if you want to in the comments or in the email, but I think I was perfect on hole 17 at Worlds at Ivy Hill.
I think I was too.
I don't think I ever missed it.
It's my kind of shot.
Pyro.
Let's wrap it up, folks.
Should we read like two emails and be done?
Let's go for one email.
One email. Okay.
One email. Let's do it. I get to go have dinner in Boston today. Are you jealous?
Am I jealous? Where are you going to eat?
I don't know, but it's in Boston.
Why do you have to go to Boston?
I get to.
Why do you get to go to Boston?
My wife's brother's future father-in-law is in town, and we're going to meet him and have dinner with him.
I see. Well,
boom.
I hope you have a wonderful time.
I hope they have some chowder.
Chowder. A little chowder. Okay, here we go. This is from Ben Kroll. As professional car rentalers, wouldn't it be renters?
Oh, this is a good question.
Who have tried and tested many cars, what are your favorite makes and models from rentals? What is the worst and stinkiest make or model that when you turn up to collect your car, you get severely disappointed? What would be your ultimate dream rental car?
I have so much to say about this. Eagle, do you want to start?
Okay, I'll start. I would say anytime that I've gotten a Ford, I've actually been very impressed by Ford for whatever reason. I feel like their infotainment, it's like easy for me to wrap my brain around, and generally they've been pretty comfortable. The times where I've like upgraded and got like more of a luxury car, both have been Dodge Chargers, and I hate to say it, but I kind of like it. I kind of like it. Those have been fun. Other than last year, actually for the Tour Championships in USDGC, I had an ant-infested vehicle. So I had to I had to take it back and swap it out, which took a good like 4 or 5 hours of my life. Because
wait, didn't I find those ants? I was the one who discovered
them. Well, no, I was going to put on my shoes, and my shoes had just ants all up in them. So it was like, what's going on? And we kind of noticed it like the whole week at USDGC, but we weren't exactly sure. But we dug into the trunk and we found that there was like an ant nest in like the spare tire, and it was like, this is unacceptable. We gotta swap this thing out. Let me think. I'd say I just get kind of bummed when I get any sort of like economy car, whether it's like a Toyota Corolla or like Honda Accord that's been like a few years old. I mean, it's fine, but it's just like meh, not my favorite. I've been impressed with certain Kias, believe it or not. I've gotten a few Kia Souls that have been not that great, but like I remember getting a Kia Santa Fe or maybe Telluride, one of the two, and those have been good. Anything Mazda has been pretty solid for me. Mitsubishi, not very good. I got Mitsubishi and I was like, this car sucks. Like, it just nothing worked in it. I'll think of a few more, but Simon, you can begin your thoughts and insights.
Yeah, so I have been renting cars consistently a long time. I've been always with Hertz, just because I've always just collected points there, and I can just go to the lot and basically choose whatever car I want from the nicest lot, which doesn't honestly mean too much, honestly, at most airports, but they have solid selections. I think they actually just got a new fleet, basically, of bunch of new Kias, which I am a huge Kia fan. And generally speaking, I stay away from Nissan. Every single Nissan I've had is just so unbelievably like just average in every way. Like nothing stands out that is good about a Nissan, except like everything just feels like cheap. Like I don't know how else to say it.
How much have you done the Toro?
I've done it like twice or three times. I did not like that.
Okay, because I did it once with you in Portland that one time. I remember that. In 2021. When we all stayed in Vancouver, Washington in that big house.
Yeah, I remember that.
When all of you guys got invited to Eric Oakley's birthday party except for me.
Nice.
We watched King Kong. That movie was so bad.
And I remember, yeah, Kyle Klein afterwards, that was the best movie I've ever seen.
Everyone hated it. And at the end, Kyle's like, that movie was sick.
That's Kyle Klein right there. Oh my God. Anyway, this year, I actually was talking to Dustin that I wish we would have done like a little tiny little segment in the vlog about the rental car experience of that week. Because I always try to get a different car just for like fun and experience purposes. If there's an option for a different car. But generally speaking, if there's a Kia, I will probably choose Kia. Like Eagle said, Ford is always solid. I don't really love Chevy. Not really Nissan. And then for some reason, Jeeps stood out to me as kind of like not really like fun to drive.
They're clunky. They're like utility
I've
things.
Never driven a Jeep.
Okay, hey,
the worst
one.
Car we had this year, one sec, Buick. That was probably my least favorite rental car of the year. It looked kind of nice. I think they just got like a redesign, and whoever did that did a good job on making it look good. But oh boy, that thing does not drive smoothly or nicely.
I actually driven a lot of rental cars when I worked with Jomez, and we would consistently rent this like Chrysler minivan. That thing was sick. The speakers were amazing, and it had a decent amount of acceleration for a minivan and automatic doors, and it carried all of our crap and our whole team. And no, that was, I don't know. I think too, like every guy, maybe not every guy, a lot of guys go through their minivan phase. And you know who's in the minivan phase right now? Is Mr. Paul Macbeth. He says it's his favorite car he's ever driven is his Kia. And I think it's the same Kia that you have.
Yeah, I believe they have the hybrid, which came out basically right after we bought the Carnival, which is the minivan.
Yeah.
And I would love to have the hybrid, but it is what it is. And yeah, I absolutely agree. It is. A minivan is just so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that thing.
Once you have any configuration of a van, I don't think you ever want to go back. It just makes so much sense. And it's like, why would I not have a van, in all honesty?
All right. the last part of this email. If you had to relocate to another country, where would you go and why? P.S. Do more podcasts, as I am currently farming 14 hours a day, 6 days a week, with no courses nearby, and I haven't touched the discs in weeks, and I love listening to you guys while I'm on my tractor.
Shout out.
Great. Thank you, Ben.
Shout out to the man, Ben.
If I had to relocate to
soil healthy,
I would relocate to... Oh, man. I would probably relocate to Norway right now because it's beautiful and it has disc golf courses.
Very, very affordable place to live.
Yeah, and for someone, you know, who's just absolutely made of money, like myself, it's a great place to become homeless in about 6 months. No, I think in all reality, if I was going to relocate to another country, it would probably be Estonia for quite obvious reasons.
Would I relocate Simon with my family?
I think you would just move to Montreal.
Simon kind of already relocated.
I did. Yep. The only way I could make this life work for me was to completely relocate my life and start a family over here because it didn't work otherwise. I just kind of didn't like it before when I still lived in Germany. But now I would go to Fiji.
Wow.
That's a good one.
Well, Ben Kroll, thank you very much. That brings us to the end of episode.
We didn't know where Eagle would go.
Oh, sorry.
Can you guess where I'd go?
Yes.
Where?
Eagle would go.
Well, Eagle would go to Hawaii right now, but that's not another
country.
I know.
Eagle would go to Tokyo.
I would go to Japan.
Nice. Good one. Sorry.
I go to Japan or, I don't know, it's technically U.S., but there's a lot of like interesting U.S. territories that I find intriguing, like Guam, American Samoa, and then there's, gosh, where is it? The Philippines. I've always wanted to go to the Philippines. It seems like a pretty cool spot. Somewhere in Southeast Asia or like, you know, South Pacific.
Borneo.
Really intrigues me. That's on the money.
I think I would relocate to Chile or Argentina.
New Zealand would probably be a good spot, in all honesty, if you wanted to keep the disc golf dream alive.
Where?
New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Good things.
Great call.
The tour down under. We had a bunch of people right on this very deck right outside our room for steak night, including a New Zealander, a Kiwi, Henry Pearson.
Yep. I just want to go somewhere where I can go to the beach and play golf every day.
That sounds like New Zealand.
If that's New Zealand, then I'm in. Let's see what in
Crush Pepper's coming to New Zealand.
I think you should just go to Puerto Rico.
Sometime in the future.
All right, let's. We have a child coming in about 10 minutes, I would guess. So we're going to be done, and this episode is going to be called Nose Job.
Snot Rocket.
Snot Rocket or Nose Job?
Oh.
I think Snot Rocket is better.
I'm in. I like it.
Ooh, we're just short of XL. Well, that's what they want.
We are. We had a little mishap. So I don't know. We're like right on Crush Pepper XL territory.
Yeah.
Right. And we'll be over in South Carolina next week.
Down in the South, and we're going to have ourselves a nice Southern episode for number 29.
Yeah, we'll hear you guys over there.
If this episode gets 20,000 listens, we'll do the whole podcast in a Southern accent.
I am the worst at accents in the world.
That'll make it even better.
All right.
Peace.
All right. Peace and love.
Bye, bye, bye.
Bye. Check, check. How you doing? How we doing? Hey, Will. How we doing?